Damn. All right. We're live with the Brothers Wiz podcast number 14. Today we have a long lost brother, JJ Boyd, finally decided to join us. He's been burning the candle at like four ends. He cut it in half. That way he could burn it, you know, in all directions. And then Justin Wilson, as always, he's reliable, unlike some other people, maybe mentioned earlier. And then Andrew couldn't make it. He inconveniently got scheduled for a meeting at just the wrong time. But to fill in, we have Justin Miller. He is a cat I met at the Vegas Mum a couple years back. And really smart guy, pretty cool kid, just got married, young strapping gentleman. A good pop in his step. He works for a Wisp and does a lot of Microtik stuff. He also does some Ubiquity, and that's one of the cool things that he's here to talk about. He just deployed a bunch of the air fiber, correct?
Yes.
Excellent. So I won't ask him any details about where, when, or who, for why, but he's going to tell us as much as he can about what he thinks about them, and I guess kind of anything you ran into in the install process, because I'm sure you hit a couple of interesting snags.
They work pretty good. We've got a wide range of distances between 216 meters to 5,850 meters. So we've got a wide range of experience with aligning these now.
Convert that to Merkin for me.
Merkin? I only have feet. I don't have meters or miles.
Miles.
So that's 709 feet. Up to 19,000 feet, it's a little. They work pretty well. We have some rain fade issue on the length that's close to 6 kilometers. We dropped down to 500 megabits from 740. Experiencing that a little bit tonight since it's raining here in this area.
Yeah, sent it your way.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, when they're aligning these things, they just point them and then they tune them in, and you're supposed to sweep through the whole left and right and up and down, and because you can align on the sublobes from the signals and run into problems. So that's one thing we've learned. Another thing, we're using polyphaser arresters for the gigabit PoEs. Those work well. I had a little concern about them not working because there's no real officially supported arresters. They just say, hey, use one. And there's a lot of talks in the forums about which ones to use and that kind of thing. So we get these for about $50 from StreakWave. They work pretty good. So we're seeing...
I was going to say, did you guys get any of the affected PoE injectors?
Yeah, we did. The first four air fibers we got, the radios themselves, were pre-ordered on that first batch that they did. And we got a box out of the blue with some PoEs. And we're like, what are these? And it came with a little note and everything. And the problem was that we had all the air fibers out, and we mixed everything all up, so we had no idea which ones were bad, and they didn't, in the note, say, hey, these are the bad ones, here's the date code that's bad, or, you know, basically, if they have a A52 next to the date code, they're okay, and there's a certain date range that's, you know, good.
But they didn't tell you that to begin
with. They didn't tell us that, so we were scrambling, trying to figure out which one of these PoEs were bad at the five or six sites we had these things installed at. So that was fun.
And the bad PoE, what did they say the side effects were on that?
They didn't really mention it, but from what I've read, and I could be wrong, that they caused the radio to get a little too hot or something, and it would lock up. But I have no idea.
Well, that's not too bad. So it wasn't like equipment damage?
Oh, well, some of them probably did get damaged. So I know at least one case that I read where it got damaged. So...
Interesting. Well, what do you think about the performance so far, the throughput, all that good stuff?
Latency, we've got 5 links up, and with Microtek's in between. It's all 1100 AX2s. And from end to end, over probably a total of about 12 miles, it's 3 millisecond latency across all of it. So they're very consistent with that. They definitely are low latency links. And the performance is good. The Microtech tests, you know, as reliable as they are, definitely pull down 680 on the UDP, and the TCP test from our edge out works really well because it's a x86 box, and it can generate the amount of traffic for that. But that was about 680 as well. But going back the other way from the endpoint, the remote side can't push more than 140 on the TCP. So it's just a limitation on that particular box at that end.
So. Do the air fibers have a built-in test like the other Ubiquities?
No, they don't. Not that I've seen. Not under the tools menu.
Okay.
But that side of the network is... we converted from a bridge side of the network to full OSPF. We did that in one night, and that's about 20 properties for that.
Nice.
So
good.
So how finicky are these guys? So if you have them aligned, everything's perfect.
If you
how
lean,
much wiggle can you get?
If you wiggle the radio, you can hear it in the headset. It sounds like Space Invaders. It's a constant hum, and it has ticks in it for, I guess, when it cycles, it ticks. And you can push on it, and it's like, meow, meow, you know, or whatever. So you can hear it. You can definitely see it. And they're very, very sensitive. So,
gotcha. So if you guys, or rather, if you mount this on a pole that's got any kind of sway, any kind of give, it's gonna.
Yeah, you need less than 0.5% sway for it.
So at distance, do you think winter and summer that you're gonna have to realign these things?
You mean from wind or from?
Well, like if you're doing a 5 mile shot, I'm just like, and you've got it on a 20 foot pole, just the variance in temperature. Do you think that'll make it kind of move enough to?
Nah, I don't think so.
Okay.
We don't have anything on a 20 foot pole like that. it's all non-pins on top of roofs or one of them is actually on the side of a building, and it's a big beefy 3-inch pipe.
Are you pretty happy with the mounting hardware?
Yeah, they are very easy to mount. They have a bracket that you attach to the pole first, and then you hang the radio on it, and then you tighten it down.
Okay.
And there's 8 screws on it, you know, 2 on the top, 2 on the bottom, that you can loosen and then adjust the radio, you know, using the there's 2 adjustments for the elevation and
are they like a geared?
Yeah, it's geared.
Okay.
It helps to have a I think it's a 13 millimeter socketing wrench, you know, one of the ones that clicks.
Yeah.
And I went and I think from Lowe's and got one that had a little adapter on it that you can flick from, you know, tighten and loosening. So you don't have to take the wrench off. You just leave the wrench on and flick the thing, and then you can, you know, go the other way. But you really got to go slow through the whole range, too. And once you find where the highest signal is, you stop there, and then you do fine adjustments. So.
Yeah. Well, 24 gigahertz is better than some of the upper frequencies where you got to align them with a voltmeter.
Yeah.
How do you not have any questions on this, JJ? You're sitting there nodding your head.
Oh, because I've deployed 2 of them. So
have
I was
you?
Just like, yeah.
So this is old hat. Well, do you have anything to add to the conversation then?
No, they work great for us. Unfortunately, they weren't for my network, so I don't have a day-to-day involvement in their deployment. However, the people that I deployed them for aren't currently using them at full capacity. It's kind of an across the street ordeal for them. They only needed about 300 megs, so. It's working great for them, and I pretty much could just lay them down, and they would work for those guys. So, I didn't get nearly the you know, the gamut of deployments that Justin did with his containerful that I've seen him standing next to.
Yeah, 5 holdings and a spare. So.
Yeah. So that's the reason I was just kind of just being quiet here. I'm like, I only had 2.
Yeah, wireless, the wireless guy.
We've got another 5 links on order too. So
very nice. I'm sure Robert's like, which team am I going to buy next?
Have you been pretty happy with the the firmware hasn't been buggy or anything like that, or you notice any oddities in firmware?
No oddities. I haven't noticed anything. It works as well. It works better than expected for me because it's first product release. It's, you know, only a couple revisions into the firmware. I was really surprised that it works as well, and it's continuing to work as well, you know. So
it's kind of like I feel like they just kind of took the Canopy firmware and put a different face on it.
I mean, probably. It feels,
like, I kind of got under the hood and, you know, in the SSH and, started banging away with Canopy commands and it locks them. So.
Really? Well, I mean, when you hire, you know, basically an all development team, you know, which to me kind of stands to reason that if they hired the Motorola guys and this was the only thing they were working on and it was in development for, a year and a half, 2 years, that it would probably be a pretty solid project because they aren't stretching those guys to mess with anything else. They were just focusing on this. So.
True.
Kind of stands to reason.
Yeah, I have quite a bit of VoIP traffic going across it in our deployment that I did for these people, and it's working excellent. And then there's another WISP that is in my region that needed to go just like 2 miles, and they're using theirs. But where I'm at, I can't figure out a way to use one on my production network because all my links are like 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, you know, 40 miles. I don't have a single link that's under 10 miles, I don't think. Well, probably 7 miles.
It's great for us since we're all urban. It's all downtown, so fits us like to a T. That's going to be a game changer for us.
Yeah, that's why you see all the user shots, you know, in like cityscapes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
everybody deploying on top of buildings.
Yeah,
yeah. We jumped the train tracks with it is what we did because we went to the railroad around here. It's Southern Railway Systems. Mm-hmm. And asked them about, you know, running fiber over, under, around, whatever, for this particular project. And the response we got was, we own everything from heaven to hell.
Yeah. Dude, we deal with UPACs a lot, Union Pacific, and it's crazy. Like, whenever you want to go under the tracks, first you have to, you can't, like, touch the tracks within 15 or 20 feet. You have to go straight down, go underneath. They have to have a flagger out there the whole time. You have to pay the flagger. You have to have all the approved safety gear. You have to – every contractor has – it's just insane. And then, like, the last time we had a bore going underneath, these guys got held up, and the UPACS guy said, like, on Friday, he's like, at 3 o'clock, this is project's over, whether you guys are done or not. He's like, I'm going home. and we stop right there. And they got done, I don't know, apparently beforehand, so it all worked out. But, man, it was like you just don't mess around with those guys.
Yeah, so we just shot air fiber across and said, neener, neener.
Yeah, it was easier. Crazy, man. Well, what else have you been working on, Mr. Miller? Since you do work for a WISP, you do touch a lot of different stuff. Tell us something interesting about yourself. How did you even get started doing this WISP thing?
Oh, that's a long story. I worked at an advertising agency, and we had a need for bandwidth because we hosted all their sites ourselves. And we two doors down, there was a photographer, and he needed a lot of bandwidth because he was hosting images for certain racetracks and NASCAR stuff. And he needed a lot of bandwidth, so we kind of started a consortium, and that kind of grew. We got a master electrician, and then we got a really good Linux Debian guy who's a really good web programmer and knows a lot about routing and BGP and all that stuff. And he was been building out the core network. And after a while, this other guy, Scott, came along, and he had a Wisp, and he was doing things, and he kind of started needing the bandwidth too, so he became part of the consortium, but really needed the most bandwidth and everything. And then the economy took a dump, and the agency went under, and I just jumped ship from where I was over to with Scott. So that's how I got started with Wisp.
Very cool.
Nice. So obviously Air Fiber was something everybody's been interested in. So now that, of course,
Jay, I can't wait to come and play that MAME. I always see it, and I'm like, man, I want to play that thing.
Well, you know where I live. You got my address. You mailed me something. Come on with it. always off topic. So the Air Fiber was definitely something interesting. And then all of you fools have the CCRs out there now. Those have been out in the wild, and people have been using them. And, well, other than Mr. Miller, their ship.
I haven't jumped to that ship yet.
Yeah. But Wilson and JJ certainly have. And I think we're on beta 6.
Mine's running RC11, I think.
RC11? Okay. I couldn't remember where we were at. So all of the RCs that keep popping out are really just CCR updates, one after another.
Yeah, CCR improvement. Yeah, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. So what do you guys think so far?
I mean, I haven't seen the issues that other people are seeing. I talked to, you know, a couple other Wisps, and they're saying, oh, we get reboot issues every, you know, couple days. It just reboots on us. And, you know, I don't see that, but I'm not, you know, some of these guys are, they're the ones who had the same issues with 5.7 and the reboot issues. So, you know, mine's been pretty stable. Had a problem. I upgraded from, I think, 9 to 10 maybe, and it just locked up. And so it required a physical reboot of the machine, I think. I'm not sure if that's what it was, but, you know, all of a sudden one day it just stopped, and, you know, the next time it booted up, it was on RC10. So, I mean, mine's passing 250, 300 megs on, you know, on average.
You have a bunch of firewall rules on there?
Not really a bunch of firewall rules. Right now they're pretty minimum. You know, you and I talked about the, you know, the difference in 6 and 5, you know, the global queues and stuff like that. So that's why mine's not really, you know, running too much. But my CPU's like 7% at the most.
And you do have that quality of service policy on there, right?
No, I don't. Okay. I actually pushed it to a downstream router running 520.
Better safe than sorry. Wait till it gets a little bit more mature and then start throwing some more at it.
Well, right now it's running 287 megs one way, 26 megs the other way. CPU's 1%.
That's nice. That's really nice. How about you, JJ? You have yours actually in production yet?
It's in production, but the only thing I'm moving across it right now is our office traffic, so not much. I took that. I don't know if you've ever seen Andrew's QoS script or not, but I'm running that on it, on our office traffic. He's identifying everything from, I mean, I don't think you could think of much more to identify with his script. I had to modify it a little bit to get it to work on the CCR. I've probably at the max got like 40 megs going through it whenever during peak times in our office, but I'm not doing much with it yet. I've kind of mocked up our data center build out network on the guy and thrown a ton of VLANs on it, and then done a bunch of VLANs going out to different different switches, and just made sure that it would, you know, perform what I'm wanting to do. So my config's probably going to be pretty simple. In the, you know, I'm thinking about maybe doing our BGP on x86 and then just using this for VLAN aggregation. So,
really? How come?
I just want to see how it does in the beginning. I don't know. I was going to talk to you some more about it and see what happens.
I'm all for experimenting on your network. That's fine.
I mean, sure. We'll do it.
So that kind of leads into what JJ mentioned. This is going to be the core of his data center. He's actually developing a data center, which is, would you say, about 90% complete now at this point?
We're probably, I don't know, it's hard to put a percentage on it. I was thinking about that very question today because the guy that owns the property came by and said, so he was gracious enough to give us 2 months for our build out, and we paid him, you know, the lease for the first time this month. And he's like, so how far along are you guys? And he's like, it looks like you're about 80%. And I was like, you know, he doesn't understand any of the electrical that's going on. Or, right. You know, I think about the small things, and we've not even got into all the small things yet. So all of our stuff's been construction. So, you know, all the sheet goods, you know, you start putting up, you know, hoses, start putting up all of the sheetrock, and all, you know, amazing things start happening quickly. But then you get into the small stuff with, you know, your air handlers and your ductwork and you know, just your sub panels and just all the little stuff, and that's where my mind stays, is on the little stuff. And so as far as I'm concerned, probably we're at 40%. But no, I would say we're probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 70% complete with the build out. We moved all of our office stuff out of our old building, ready or not. Sam said, here's a rifle, ready or not. I guess that's a saying from the military. And so we kind of moved all of our stuff into our office spaces. My office is the only room in the building that's completely trimmed out, just 100% finished with ductwork and everything. So it's very nice. You know, I moved out of a very small office into this one, and so now it's like my little desk sitting over in the corner, and all I hear is the hum of all of the new lights. So
I'm sure you'll have it full of crap in no time.
Oh, definitely. As we start moving all the stuff out of storage,
it'll just start stacking.
Yeah, it'll just start stacking up. A little bit of hoarder in me, so.
That's cool. So you've got the, I mean, because I've been working in the data center industry for the last 6 years, I guess. And so you kind of starting into it, I think it's like so fun to be able to go from the ground up. So, I mean, you've done basically everything. So the access control system, you found one, you installed it, and you got that actually. It's operating pretty well, right?
Yeah, I've not had any problem. I've never seen it.
Biometrics, everything.
Yeah, we did bio in, bio out on all of the data center doors. We don't actually have the actual environment door up yet. They've not delivered it yet. It's going to be a double glass door. We've got to also build the glass wall that'll separate our office space from the environment space. We've got, I don't know, there was thousands of dollars of glass that we purchased, and we're gonna start the building we're in. We could expand probably 10 or 20,000 square feet. I mean, it's a very large building. We've got right now about 2,000 square foot of floor space, and we took 1,000 of it for office space, and then we built up because it's a very tall building. And so we have probably about 2,000 square foot of office space, and then our floor space for the data center space, I think it's right at 1,200 square foot immediately. But going bigger with it would be as simple as just smacking down a wall, and there's another 5,000 square foot of floor space immediately.
You say smacking down a wall, but isn't it an adjoining wall to the existing data center?
Yeah.
All right.
So, we
tend to pick up some dust when you smack down walls, I don't know if you...
You might need to add some cooling too.
Just put a plastic sheet.
Oh yeah,
it'll be good.
There's a plan in place. I make it sound a little easier than it is. I'm a hopeless optimistic, I guess you could say. But smacking down a wall would not be a big deal. I mean, it's the building was partitioned when, like, it was just a big, huge, you know, metal building to start with, and then they partitioned it to sublet the different areas in the building. And the building, you know, due to the economy, is mostly vacant, which is going to work out good for us. So
did you find any use for the MFIs?
Or
your other boards that you use, the Raspberry Pi or that other one?
The BeagleBone. Yes. See, that, all of this leads into Sensor Ninja, which is another project JJ started.
What is Sensor Ninja?
It's basically, goodness. Give them the lowdown, man. It's like a cloud-based data collection for sensors.
Yeah, we kind of, you know, through this process also decided to, you know, cut the candle in half, as Greg was saying, and I've got basically three jobs right now. One is the data center, two is Sensor Ninja, and three is our wireless network, which funds the rest of it, which I'm very fortunate to be where we're at with being able to basically do these other two startups at the same time. Sensor Ninja, in a nutshell, is we're building these sensors. You can either use Raspberry Pis, Arduinos, BeagleBones, anything that you can put a sensor on and send a GIT over to our cloud service. We can aggregate that data and put it in a usable format and do alerting off of it. I mean, you know, for being a brainchild of only 3 months, I think it's pretty far along on its development cycle. I think it's very attractive and it's very functional. We've deployed it for a weather station for a local ski area. We're also doing environmental monitoring for our data center. I'm doing environmental monitoring from my house. Basically, if you can turn it into a number, I can graph it for you in a cloud application. I sent Greg and Andrew. We've also got this other little board that we're playing with. We call it a Super Arduino. It's basically the Arduinos. If you guys know, have never played with them, are just these development boards. They're based off of like Atmel chips. And to me, that it's a good platform to play with. But the problem with it is you can't really update the software once it's in production unless you're physically there with a USB plugged into the guy. So that's a little bit of a standoffish thing for me. So I'm really into the Linux, you know, the embedded Linux platforms, because you can, you know, upgrade those, you know, over the air, if you will. That way, if, you know, somebody discovers a bug in your Ethernet stack or
something. Like the Raspberries.
Yeah. So, you know, all the wacky things that can happen out there.
What I wanted to do was get the Raspberry Pis and install SmokePing on them for remote agents, and actually run SmokePing, you know, throw one of those Raspberry Pis somewhere on our network and run SmokePing on it and have it collect that information. Because right now, my SmokePing server is at our office, and this new backhaul we built, not directly connected to it, so I'm monitoring it over a VPN connection, and that adds, you know, 30 milliseconds on top of what we're monitoring, and lots of other internet issues in between. So I kind of got that floating around in my head on something I want to try, but I just don't know if, you know, SmokePing will run on, you know, ARM or whatever, so I've got to look into that.
Run the dude server off of it. Off the Linux, man. And then use that as the
You'd have to use Wine, and Wine is not emulation, so you have to have x86 you know, board
so
to do that.
Emulate x86 so that you can run Wine that runs that. It'd be perfect. What could go wrong?
Well, we just lost JJ.
He'll come back.
So, yeah, JJ is basically doing everything you can possibly imagine, which is why we haven't seen him in forever, because I don't even know that his wife has seen him at this point. This is probably more human interaction than he's had in a long time. Which is crazy, because I tried calling him the other day just to ask him a quick question, and he just, like, exploded. Like, he just could not stop talking.
I talked to him one day like that, yeah.
I'm doing things! And he can't help himself. Poor guy. I just feel bad for him. Yeah, gotta get it out. So let's see. So we talked about the CCR, we talked about the air fibers. What else is going? What do you have cooking, Justin? We haven't talked to you in forever.
Yeah, I went to the Wireless Without Limits cruise, so
that's right.
I didn't have internet for a while.
You went for a 3-hour cruise.
Did you get any withdrawal symptoms? Did you, you know, shake in the fetal position in the cabin or anything?
There's no room really in those cabins.
Well, see, we had a decent one. We got an upgraded one, and it didn't really seem too small. We had a king size bed in there and still had room. So it was, you know, it was nice.
And the toilets, though, it still feels like you're in, like, an airplane bathroom.
Yeah, it pretty much does.
Yeah, it's cool.
But, you know, the satellite internet on a moving ship, so, you know, you can't expect much as far as internet goes.
Yeah. Was it like a 3-day cruise?
5-day.
5-day, excellent.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do any more than 5. What would get to me is, you know, you can't go anywhere. If you want to leave, you can't. So, you know, that kind of gets to you a little. But, I mean, for a conference venue, it's a really good idea because everybody's there. You know, they can't go off in different areas. You know, you see everybody around the ship. You know, so it's not like, you know, when we all went to Vegas, people were going to this show and people are going to this show and, you know, tried to meet up with everybody. It was just, you know, everybody's there.
It does seem really like the likelihood of you running into somebody that you can have like a normal conversation with seems pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you're on the ship with 2,000 people, but, you know, I saw, you know, probably, well, at least everybody I recognized from the conference, I saw them, you know, multiple times.
Was it exclusively Wireless Without Limits, or was it half guests and half this conference? Or
I think they may have had another conference or two going on. I think I heard somebody say there were like 200 or 300 people with the Wireless Without Limits. So, you know, out of the 2,000, only, you know, 20% of them or so were the Wireless Without Limits people. So, that's but cool. it was, I didn't go to a lot of the, the sessions that they had, but, you know, I went and talked to the vendors quite a bit and went to, you know, the Ubiquity vendor session and, the Cambium, went to their session and stuff. So, I mean, it was definitely worthwhile.
And what was the email you sent? It was like boat dump afterwards or something?
Yeah, cruise dump.
Cruise dump, there you go. I was like, oh, so you couldn't go the whole time. It was just like, just kind of...
Yeah, just bad. You know, all the emails and stuff I send, I would, you know, download my email because they charge you per minute. So it's not, you know, data usage, it's just per minute. And if it's dirt slow and it takes you 5 minutes to download, you know, one email, you still get charged 5 minutes. Yeah. So what I do is I download my email, reply offline, you know, hop back on and send it out. So one of the coolest things that I thought was Cambium is coming out with a 2.4 gig OFDM product. And pretty much everybody sitting in there was like, okay, where do we write our check? Because 5 gig, you know, is OFDM. And, you know, I see 5 gig do things that you wouldn't expect 5 gig to do.
So when you say 5 gig OFDM, what are we talking about?
The modulation. JJ can probably explain the modulation better. But it's a, you know, OFDM on 5 gigahertz has always been kind of billed as near line of sight. Even though it's a higher frequency, you know, OFDM actually performs better than, say, 2.4, which is whatever it is. I don't know, PSK, whatever the modulation on 2.4 normally is. You know, we have clients on the Zig network. They're NAG 79, NAG 81 at the tower, and they're still able to pull 3 and 5 megs. You know, they might be looking through a couple trees or something like that. You put the same, you know, same setup on 2.4, you're not going to perform that well, you know, even at a better signal. And it mainly has to do with the OFDM. So you combine a better modulation with a lower frequency that actually, you know, can penetrate stuff more. You got a pretty cool product.
Even with as noisy as 2.4 is, it's still going to be okay?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 2.4 is getting more and more unusable, but, you know, with the shielding and, you know, some tricks like that. And plus, you know, if it's a, you know, cambium, you know, Motorola, heck, I think their receive sensitivity is like neg 109. So, you know, most other radios are like in the 90s. So they got, you know, 10, 15 dB better than most of the radios out there. So, you know, you can put them in noisier environments. Granted, a cambium AP is going to be, you know, $3,000, but, you know.
So let's see, what else did you put in your notes? You said Ubiquiti's coming out with a 365 WiMAX product.
That was the rumor. I can't confirm or deny where I heard that or anything.
Smell what you're cooking.
Yeah, so, you know, that was the rumor floating around the ship.
Right. You hear a lot of people talking.
Yeah. So, you know, it's I'm guessing that it's going to be based upon the new software-based radios. So, you know, it'll probably definitely replace the 365 stuff they have out there. So, and it makes sense, you know, if you're looking to jump into something that is kind of groundbreaking, you go to these things and the Pure Waves and the Runcoms seem to be the two that a lot of people are talking about. You know, Pure Wave has a 3.65 base station that has like a 6x6 antenna option, and they're getting better penetration than 900 megahertz, and they're able to push 10 megs to the client. So, you know, if Ubiquiti can come out with something that's, you know, not $15,000, you know, they're gonna do all right.
By the way, Windows 8 is the worst operating system ever.
Right here, buddy, right here. You need one of those.
What is that? It looks like somebody ate your phone. Somebody took a bite out of it. No,
but yeah, it was, you know, it was good too. I got to ask some questions since it was you know, a kind of a smaller conference. You know, I got to ask some questions to Ubiquiti about, you know, a couple things that had been bugging me, and
you got more attention.
Yeah, you get more attention.
Yeah, and where are they going to go?
Yeah. I was watching a couple of the guys from Ubiquiti. They had some of the, let's call them fanboys, chasing them around. And I could tell, you want to jump off the ship, don't you, dude? They just had that look in their eye.
Hilarious. Of course, they'd never admit to it.
They'd never admit to it. No, they're very, you know, very proper and polite about it all.
You also mentioned something about interstate batteries.
Yes. If anybody and JJ, are you using sealed batteries in your deployments?
We use all kinds of batteries.
Get sealed batteries. Yeah. I was talking to these guys from Interstate, and they're not too far from you. One of their distributors. And they're a little more expensive. They're about twice the price of a you know, a sealed marine or a, you know, unsealed marine battery. But you don't have to touch them. You don't have to put water in them. You know, there's no maintenance to them. They survive the cold weather, you know, quite well. We're on the Zig network. I think we're going to start switching all ours out to it. I know Jab, you know, is one of the bigger WISPs. They're buying these type of batteries. So
one of the dilemmas that I've noticed or experienced with, you know, we bought, you know, Trojan batteries, and, you know, if anybody out there is buying, you know, a lot of batteries, it's kind of in the solar world, it's the, you know, it's the Cadillac of batteries. And what we found was they still only last about 2 years. And then if they take a lightning strike, then you're out, you know, $800 in batteries. So we started buying, and for us, all of our stuff is on top of mountains. So lightning strikes are imminent. And, so we started buying lesser expensive batteries, and with the you know, with the regular maintenance plan of, okay, we're just going to replace these every year. But definitely if you're in an environment where that's not an issue for you, and you can, you know, throw something on top of, you know, building or in a rack somewhere and know that it's going to be okay for the next 5 years, then...
Well, I mean, for you, JJ, it's probably mostly the extremes in temperature, right? Because I know temperature swings will degrade the life of a battery a lot, as well as every time you drain it and bring it back, it's going to lose a little bit of life. So I guess all of that combined for you, right?
And that's one of the advantages of these batteries, is they don't suffer from that. You know, we have that problem on our current batteries. If it drains down, you know, basically the battery heats up so bad, it just, you know, it boils the water inside there.
Yeah, and I think the, like, the plates inside can start to get kind of coated or whatever.
Yep.
How do these batteries differ from the ones that you typically find in the APC UPS or, you know, one of your home UPSs where you get the little square batteries that are 12 volt or, you know, 5 amp hours?
Those are AGM glass mat. Are the ones that they're hawking now, Justin, are they AGM glass mat?
No, they're not glass mat. They're almost, you know, the pitches, they're almost 100% lead. You know, they are.
So they're heavy.
Yeah, I mean, these are heavy batteries.
So we've been using the Web Power Switch product. I don't know the name of the digital debt loggers or whatever. They have this
digital loggers, yeah.
Yeah, 24 port mid span that you can hook batteries up to, and we've been deploying those at a few sites and hooking just those, you know, batteries up to them that are 12 volt in series or whatever. So I was curious if there would be any benefit in upgrading those to those Interstate batteries you're talking about, or just leaving them as is.
Well, how about the Yellow Top Optimas? I mean,
those are only 55 amp hour. Yeah,
they don't have enough kick for you.
No.
And the problem, you like Justin says, the, you know, if once you start hooking up batteries to some of these, you know, a lot of the APC UPSs allow you to, you know, hook external battery banks to it. The problem you run into pretty quickly is the charging system in those systems can't keep up with the bigger batteries. So you gotta, even though you can, you know, kind of hook them up, you gotta deal with that, hey, can the circuitry inside this thing, can it, you know, charge 200 amp hour batteries and keep up with it?
Before the next outage.
Yeah, or, you know, can they even put enough juice into it to even, you know, bring it back?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's kind of, once you step up to that, that's kind of one of the things you got to think about. Our biggest problem is we have to go out every 3 months and fill up, you know, the water in these batteries. You know, if you're just using an off the shelf deep cycle battery, you know, we have to go, you know, check the water levels.
So you guys are having problems with the water just boiling off from the heat. Yeah.
Yep.
We have the opposite problem with them freezing. So, where if, you know, most of the time when your battery is going to freeze, it's because it's cold and there's snow on the ground and it's on top of some mountain somewhere and it's 7 degrees. Like I was just looking at some temperatures right now on some of our sites. Right this second, it's 22.3 degrees at the site that I sent the picture out most recently with the wind turbine and everything. And last night it got down to 7 degrees. So, when these batteries go dead, the specific gravity of these batteries is high enough to where the batteries won't freeze you know, the water in them won't freeze if a battery's charged. But if the battery's dead, then the specific gravity gets low enough, they will freeze and bust.
Yeah.
And so we've experienced that. With I mean, even the sealed batteries still have, you know, they still have an electrolyte in them.
Yeah.
So, unless they're just, I don't know, maybe they're sticking antifreeze in there. I'm not sure.
they put little jackets on the outside.
Put coats on them.
There you go.
Sure. So we're excited to get some of those.
You'll have to let us know how those work. I'm very excited to hear that.
Yeah, I'm excited to get some.
What kind of pricing and amp hours are you looking at on those?
You can get. Let me pull up the email. I just sent you guys some email, but for everybody out there listening,
that cracks me up that you guys are excited about batteries. How sad is your life? You guys are so juiced about
batteries. Batteries! They have a 100 amp hour one, which is the $200-ish range, and then a 40 amp hour battery, which is a $100-ish range.
And this 12 volts?
Yeah.
We had somebody, I don't know if I told you guys this, we had somebody steal one of our batteries off of one of our mountaintops. It was
we've had that many times, yeah.
You know, it's like 200-pound battery, and somebody schlepped it off the top of this mountain. It's like, you can have it, fine, I'll just take another one up there on my four-wheeler. There were no tire tracks or anything. Somebody just walked up there and took it.
So, Bigfoot, man.
Yeah, the Squatch needed to charge his cell phone.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, ancient aliens.
Right? You need that guy explaining it, where he's all like, got the crazy hair, and he looks like
Was it ancient aliens theorists theorize that your batteries were stolen by ancient aliens?
Yeah, we've had a lot of tower sites get broke into. They, you know, they cut the fence and steal the batteries.
And the copper, you know, we're co-located with a lot of county stuff, and they'll just come up there, or, you know, a lot of cell phone towers, they'll come up there. They don't know if power's on this and or not. They're just up there cutting away and hacking away. And some of them's been zapped, but, you know, lots of times they get away with some good amount of copper. So yeah. we've been putting cameras on all the sites for this one county. I mean, they've paid us to do it, and then we backhaul the video to their MVR for them. Have any of you guys, not to just, I always do this, and it's
that's all good. Come work, on with it.
So, Air Vision too. Have you guys tinkered with that?
I haven't touched it.
No, but I downloaded it. But
there's a new version of the software. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, it's beta, so, you know, I guess I'll get in trouble for this again.
Well, they did send out an email if you're on the beta program. They did send out an email. So, you know, it's not like it's super secret.
Okay. But, yeah, there's a beta. You can go sign up for their beta and check it out. There you go. All right. Moving along.
We had some of those installed somewhere, and we just ended up getting third-party software to monitor them because the regular software was just so bad.
That's what a lot of people are doing. You know, they're using the Ubiquiti cameras, but they're, you know, buying a third-party DVR.
The new software, I can say from my experience with it, I've only had 2 days with it, and 2 days with me doing everything else that I got going on in my life right now. But the CPU with the 7 cameras I have on it is sitting at like 4%. Where before with on this same box it was set maxed out at 100, with all the cameras at 480p. Now all these cameras are 780. Also on the AirCam domes, we now have sound, which is cool because they've had a microphone on them since day one, but it's just been unusable.
Unify has got a new version coming out too, 3.0. which is supposedly going to support multiple sites in one installation and some other new features. I don't know if you guys got the email about it, but there was Ubiquiti's first presentation that they did for the AirFiber, and then they did one for the Unify. I was able to attend the AirFiber one, but not the UniFi. So I missed out on that. But
yeah, I was out of town on that one too.
Looking forward to that. We got some hotels with that stuff installed.
Yeah, we got some of that out. Speaking of, while we're on the Ubiquiti bandwagon, I tried the new version of the MFi controller software. The older versions obviously were a little bit buggy, but and I even checked just recently to see if they had a new version since the last time I updated, and they don't. But it's cute. All the sensors seem functional. I even have an M-Power, and it seems to function okay. The scheduling part of it doesn't really work 100% yet, but it looks like they're getting pretty close. And also, you can't do like timed events. Like, there's no if this event happens, stay on for X amount of time. Or if this event, say motion detector is active for 10 minutes, then go ahead and do this thing. Or you know that you can't have any like hysterics. There's no timed based anything in there. So until that comes into place, you can't really use it as a SCADA system or a control system of any kind. It's really just a way to look at temperatures. And
you can't monitor the controller with SNMP and then trigger something with Nagios or something else?
Well, I haven't actually done a walk on it, but right now I don't think you can.
Okay. The air fibers have no SNMP pretty much for all the interfaces or signal or anything.
And I know on this thing too, in the MFi control software, you actually have to tell it what each individual port is configured as. So I think it might just kind of dump back a raw set of information, and it just interprets it based on what you tell it it is. So
they're probably just shooting that RS, you know, the serial data straight over. It's probably the import's probably nothing more than a Ethernet to serial converter. If I had to.
Because they do have an import version that's that just spits out like RS-232 ports. So I mean, they've already got a model that basically does that. It's just RS-232 to Ethernet. So it might just be a little microcontroller that's interpreting the information and shooting it back via serial. Because I know you have to tell on the import. It basically, well, no, it kind of sends a beacon. The M5 finds it, but on the M-Power, you actually have to log into it and tell it what the IP address is of the controller, and then it will go out and start communicating.
Gotcha.
And that's also cool. On the first version of the M5, the only way I could make it work was with zero security. So you couldn't do any WPA, no protection of any kind. You just had to have a. So I did just another SSID, and did a connection list filter on there, so only he could connect. Obviously, no encryption or anything, but. I seriously
first time
doubt
I've seen those things, I was like, what is that? And they said, nothing.
I mean, they're neat. And actually, yeah. I hooked up one for a little while to Gavin, my 7-year-old's TV, so that it would cut off at bedtime every night. And so I actually made a video of it the very first night I had it in play, just waiting. And then it turns off. And he was blaming me. I was like, I didn't do it. He's like, oh, it's that M5 thing you put in there. Gotcha. Kid.
That's great.
But it's, yeah, they're pretty neat, and they have, I think you can sync something like 8 or 10 amps off of each individual port. So one of the projects I wanted to do, but I can't do it because the control software is not there yet, is make a ghetto MDF or like a MacGyvered MDF. So the idea being we have these distribution frames in different places, and sometimes they're just a little hut, and we'll put a junky window unit in there, like the cheapest $100 unit. So you put two of those window units in there, running off of this, keeps track and like kicks it on when it needs to, and if one dies, you know, it kind of cycles them back and forth. And, do all that stuff. And once they get the software done, I'm confident it'll be able to do that, you know. So it'll be kind of a neat little demonstration, I guess.
I could show you how to do that. You should have something in your possession that would be fairly easy to do that with.
Well, I mean, I've got several things. I've got, let's see, what do we have? I know right here, I've got a PLC, and then I've got this super Arduino thing that some kid made. I don't know, that's supposed to do some kind of thing. I don't know. You never know whether they really work or not. Let's see, I've got, right here, I've got an Arduino Mega. I've got...
you can throw that away. That's junk.
Well, it's covered in dust. You can see how much I use it.
.NET, not good.
And then I've got
that's the mega.
I got a mini PLC, or a micro nano PLC, nano super PLC. These guys are awesome. Got Ethernet built in, so I could do it with any of those easily. But that's not the point. I want to do it with the M-Fi, because I have the M-Fi stuff and I want to make it work. I want to like show that it actually functions, and it does function. It's just, you know, all the controls not there yet. So that's cool. My rant for the M-Fi stuff.
Well, I had a couple people, you know, ask me on the cruise, you know, we're sitting around various places, and they're like, "What do we use the M-Fi for?" And that, you know, that seemed to be a fairly common thing, you know. Okay, it's cool, but, you know, in non-geeky, everyday, real world, why do we want to buy it and use it?
Yeah, and there's
sustainability. Just throw that word at them, and then it's like the golden grail. There you go.
Well, also for the M-Fi stuff, these units don't really operate on their own. You have to have controller software somewhere that it phones back into. And if you lose connection, all of the data that was collected in that interval is lost. So people are saying, you know, if you lose connection, you have enough memory in these things, just store the data in the local M ports, and then when it comes back online, then send it. But also, in theory, if you have a little MDF and you want it to be a self-contained unit, you actually have to have a server in there running the server software. The hardware isn't, you know, it isn't clever enough to be able to actually do control functionality.
Does the software run on Linux?
I think there's a Linux version.
You might think Debian, isn't it?
I'm sure.
Might be able to run it on a Raspberry Pi.
Let's stick it out there. I think it might actually have a memory leak too, because it ends up consuming a ton of your RAM after a couple of weeks. So, next version, I'm hoping we'll fix that and have all the extra controls.
So, who's going to Kentucky?
I'm going.
Wisp America.
Yep, I'm going.
When is that?
April, I think.
First week in April, is that right?
That's actually pretty close, so...
I think we've got about 6 days before the price for booking the hotels supposedly skyrockets. So...
And you know, JJ, if you guys just want to go for like 1 day, you can buy, you know, like a 1 day pass. Right. You know, they have the sessions up, so you can say, hey, I want to go this day. You know, obviously a big thing of going to these is, you know, talking with the vendors. So you can, you know, say, hey, you know, this day looks like there's a couple good, you know, things I want to go to.
I just like seeing my friends in person. It's like, it's like I can look at the vendor stuff on the internet in my underwear, you know?
It's about an 8-hour drive from where I am, and it's conferences. Let's see, it's the 5th.
Yeah, so first through the 5th. So I think the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th is our days, aren't they?
Yeah, it's $349 for the conference if you're a WISPA member, and if you get a 1 day pass, it's about $150 or $175. They also have Cincinnati Red. Ball game, Reds versus the Angels on the 3rd for $40 a person. So that might be something fun to do if we go.
Yeah. I'm going to scoot out early because that's the same week as the G.I. Joe convention. So I'm not going for every day.
Oh.
You guys are so weird.
Hey. I've seen you go to Zumba, so don't go there.
That's right. You loved every second of it. That's good stuff.
So, yeah,
that's why he keeps that physique.
That's right. keep that runner's physique, man. You gotta look hungry by starving yourself. That's the idea.
So you were asking me some cool projects that we're doing, and one of them that we have coming up this weekend is there's a very prominent band coming to a location here, a theater, and they want to do a 360-degree Matrix-style live stream of the event, and we are putting up an air fiber link for one day to do this off of our air fiber backhaul network to provide bandwidth for that. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Nice.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, because air fibers you just can't throw up. You've got to do a bunch of other work and everything. And so it's a lot of work, but they're paying a lot of money for it.
It's like, have air fiber, we'll travel.
Yeah, exactly. So we're doing that, and then there's the CAA or CNAAA tournament coming up this weekend too, which we're providing bandwidth for. So
that's pretty cool.
Sweet. I've been getting a lot of onesie twosie things from I think the Microtik list. More and more people I think are getting 750s, and they're not WISPs. They're just, IT folks. I have one guy who's called me 3 or 4 times now about, doing 1-to-1 NATs on the 750s because they're running PBXs and things like that. And, so I think, at least, from the non-WISP, industry, the Microtik boards are kind of getting out there more and more.
That was one complaint somebody was saying about the U.S. mons, that they're only about WISPs, but the European one is really about kind of everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to probably in the past 2 weeks, probably 6 or 7 people who aren't WISPs. Hey, I got the 750 and I want to make it do this. Okay, cool.
I stood and witnessed a conversation between Arnis and a couple other people at the MUM this past year about that very thing, about some of the wireline guys. I think Tom was involved in that conversation as well, and it was basically until you guys have support contracts, you're not going to take off in the wireline industry. So,
like in the enterprise, yeah, that's really what's holding them back there, I think.
Where the WISP guys are just like, oh, I got some goat out here that needs some internet. I can do that.
Rock and roll, man. So speaking of the MUM, the European one's coming up in like a week. So everybody was throwing out their speculations of what they're going to announce. I think Andrew Cox and Thrift both threw out a bunch of stuff. They said the 10 gig CCR. They also see Thrift said IPS. He believes IPS. He also found in the wiki they have wireless controller wiki page now.
Oh,
so
okay.
They're going to be doing controller-based stuff. He's speculating that it'll probably just be a feature you crank on the client and it'll phone back home somehow, something like that.
Maybe a new version of the dude.
I don't know. The beta's been pretty stagnant for the last couple of few years.
Yeah, I've been checking on that forum post from time to time, and it's basically, we work on the dude when we're not working on anything else. That's kind of the attitude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's relatively
stable. I don't have any problems with it. I don't have a crash or, there's some things I'd like to see it do, but it does what it does.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. I use it every day. It's great for keeping your map current that alerts you, and as long as you export that map for emergencies, I don't see a problem with it. I know what you were thinking, Greg.
Well, I've also been thinking that I've been populating one for the last week, man. I'm going crazy. And the company that I've been doing this work for, they're probably, one of their guys is probably watching this. He's probably laughing at me, having a good time, knowing that I've been working on their network. Stop to do this cast, and then as soon as this cast stopped, I'm going to go right back into their network and start jacking with someone. Actually, I've been tabbing out working on it. apparently, thanks to Miller there, he was telling me about a stall issue on one of these versions that I had loaded, so hopefully this fixes it. That's what I described, sounded pretty much like what he was seeing.
Yeah, we had that happening for some buildings. We put up like 7 buildings in a week, and one of the sectors was stalling, and then one of the point-to-points that we had up was stalling. So we just threw the latest version up there, and that was the problem, and backed it down to 5.20 and solved the problem there. So I don't believe all those change log notes where it's improved stability of NV2. It just doesn't pan out all the time.
Well, it looks like they've kind of, they're in another state, so they're a little bit past peak, so I'll have to wait till tomorrow.
You should just roll it back on the air.
No, I already did. I already did roll it back while you guys were talking. I'm not even joking. I rolled it back. I was having so many problems. They were up and down anyway. Might as well roll it back while the time was...
Don't let any good... What's the saying? Don't let any good emergency go unused.
It's a good opportunity to make changes if it's down, right?
Yeah.
You gotta have in your SLA. You have to have change window defined as it's okay for there to be downtime in a change window, and then you also put in the statement that you can retroactively declare a change window.
You can go back. That's pretty much saying I can break it whenever I want to.
That's right, and then we'll let you know that it was a change window.
Yeah, then we'll let you know. If everything went good, then it wasn't a change window.
For sure.
I'm gonna start demoing these. It's Bitlomat. They're kind of a startup. They're doing some TDMA, low price stuff.
I've seen those.
Yeah, they were Jeff Rodwick, one of the, you know, kind of the veterans of the industry. He used to be at ImageStream, is now one of their, you know, their head sales guy. So they're doing some, you know, base stations, you know, $200, the CPE's $89, I think, and they're partnering with somebody that's writing the code that's not new to everything, so it's not like they're a brand new startup, I guess. You know, I gotta return the form to get my gear, but you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I think it's going to be good for the industry because, you know, everybody needs some competition. You know, we'll get better products out of it all the way around.
Indeed.
So I'm kind of excited that there's somebody out there that's, you know, I don't know necessarily going to go toe to toe with some of these guys, but they're going to, you know, they're going to make some waves, and, you know, who knows?
For those who don't know what it is, what frequencies, what speeds, you know, what?
Well, they're going to have 5 gig, and they're working on 2 gig. You know, speeds, I haven't used the product yet. You know, it's a MIMO-based product. You know, their website's bitlomat.com, which I'm sure Greg will, you know, post after everything's done. You know, they've kind of, you know, when you come in after somebody, you can say, hey, I would have done this different. Let's do this different. You know, some of their CPEs, a 30 degree, you know, beam width on the CPE, so it doesn't hear as much noise. You know, some things like that. They've got shielding built into the APs already. You know, we'll see where it goes.
That's crazy, man. How are these people popping up? You know, that them, Arc Wireless, just said that they were going to be doing some stuff. And I think
Arc kind of imploded. Has anybody heard anything about Arc lately? I think the company kind of imploded.
I haven't heard a thing.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people left.
They talked to us about some demo stuff, but then I don't know that anybody ever heard anything back. Did you ever hear anything from JJ?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, the, you know, they were hot and heavy for a while, and then what I heard is the, you know, a lot of people left, and there were only a couple of the original people left, and they're trying to, you know.
It felt like a gigantic capital infusion to me. You know, they were like flashy lights everywhere, and just, you know, make some antennas, you know, that's what they were doing. You know?
Always been really happy with the Arc Wireless panel, ICE 2s, Gen 2s, or whatever it is. Use those a lot for 5 gigahertz. So if those go away, we'll be pretty disappointed. We'll have to find something else. So
I'm willing to bet they're an LLC, so they're probably protected. The antenna.
Yeah, I think the antenna stuff is okay. Yeah. I think their TDMA based thing kind of imploded. I did see a thing the other day for there. They have this weird Cat 5 connector that needs a special key to get it out of like a person's router.
Yeah,
that way your customer doesn't mess with it. It sounded like a good idea, but I got to thinking, it's like, well, you know, you got to carry this key around. What happens if, you know, you plug your CPE into the customer router and you lock it in there? Well, if you need to unlock it, then you either got to do a truck roll or the customer has to do it. And if the customer has to do it, what's the point? It just seemed, you know, maybe in a high security area, it kind of seemed so, but I don't know. It just seemed weird.
Let me add it.
I can see JJ just squirting super glue in there and just saying, forget it. I'll save the extra 50 cents.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll call it Shoestring Wireless.
Hey, have you come up with a name for your data center yet?
You know, I've been rolling some things around. Colo Dojo is
I like that.
Is one that kind of stands out a little bit, but no, not really yet. We're kind of still just in the building phase, and we've not got down to the sit down and write things on paper yet phase. So, but I'm kind of liking that. We got this whole, you know, ninja theme going on with the whole place with our cloud application, and we're in a position where we're going to feed our network from this location, and we can host our own, you know, cloud servers there. So the attitude that we have is yes, we want to sell colocation to anybody that will buy it. However, if we don't sell any, then we're going to be okay because we have our own projects that need space. But definitely, you know, customers would help pave the way.
For sure. It sounds cool, man.
The colo here in around here is getting ready to build a new data center, and I was just over in that area and talking to the photographer, and he was showing me these styrofoam walls with plastic spacers in them, and you basically build the walls with the styrofoam, and you pour concrete into it, yep. And then you slap paneling on it on the outside, and on the inside some drywall, and you've got, you know, really good insulation, and it's, you know, can withstand up to 200 miles per hour winds and all that stuff. So they're getting ready to build it with that. So it's going to be pretty cool. Going to break ground probably within the next 2 months. So
200 mile an hour winds. We have a policy for that. It's called nationwide.
The only problem with this building is going to be the roof. We'll just rip off.
I was going to say,
well, believe it or not, there's a specification for data centers that, you know, wind survivability.
Yeah. I was going to say, is Nationwide going to answer all your customer calls, JJ? Are they going to take all those?
Sure. They make you whole again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you just have to sing the jingle and everything's fine.
That's right.
State Farm, right?
Oh, man.
Like a good neighbor.
Who are we talking about? Allstate? Oh, man, they're all the same to me.
Yeah.
Just another legislative product.
All right, so let's see. I'm looking at everybody's blog really quick. Let's see. Andrew did one on RadOS as a Pixie Boot server. That's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool, yeah.
I haven't done anything of any use. I've been too busy. I've come to the conclusion that I can either consult or I can write for my blog, and one pays me and the other one doesn't. So I haven't done much of my blog. But I did do one on a DIY server lift, because like the server lift people, they charge you like $9,000 for a powered one or $5,000 for a manual crank. And you can get these things called lift stackers. It's basically the same thing, powered and unpowered versions. The powered version is 3100, and the unpowered is 13.
You could have you could have it like. Do any of you guys have Aldi's? The yes. Aldi's grocery stores.
Yeah.
JJ knows what I'm talking about. You, in order to use a cart, you have this little thing on the cart. You put a quarter, and it unhooks the cart from the last one. You know, so I could see the server lift in a data center, you know, chained to a wall. Someone goes up and swipes their credit card.
Swipes their card unless you use it. That's actually pretty brilliant. Help subsidize the cost of the
Unit. Yeah, you know, but if
you can either break your back or give us your wallet. Pick one.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. stick your purchase card in there.
Our 4506 chassis, you know, we had to have four people, you know, hold that thing in the rack while we bolted it in.
Just got a new Blade server, and it was the same way. You know, you should have seen me and Sam trying to load that thing in this rack. And then we looked at the picture. You know, there's no words on the top of this Blade Center, and it's got this orange sticker that, of course, we didn't look at, and it shows a picture of two guys trying to pick the Blade Center up with the blades in it, and then it has an X through it. Yeah.
Terrible.
Then it has another picture of all the blades out of the Blade Center, and then it's got like two happy guys picking this thing up. Yeah. So finally it is in there, and actually turned it up tonight for the first time, so it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I could see the lift being a definite, you know, advantage in a data center.
Yeah, in a colo environment, it'd be really nice, especially the electric one, because it's just and it's like super granular, like little graduations, all the way up to like 6.5 feet. So, man,
build a robot that just racks everything for you. You just go
ran off an Arduino board.
I was gonna say, what do they need me for at that point? This is about job security, buddy.
You're the one over here hawking this lift master.
There you go. Or I'll be the guy that goes and pulls the quarters out of it. At the end of the
line. There you go. You're like
car wash.
There you go. And then let's see. Justin's got some factory reset for Ubiquiti stuff. That's cool via terminal. AirMax QoS. You did say something about AirMax QoS. They haven't really told you why, but if you use what WPA2, it works better.
Yeah, and maybe JJ can chime in on this. You know, the official Ubiquiti documentation says WPA2 AES works better than all other encryption, including no encryption.
Yeah, it's because the Atheros or Athros or however you want to say that chipset. Has hardware acceleration for AES.
But you're not hardware accelerating no encryption. So how can no encryption work better than, or how can encryption work better than no encryption? I see why it works better than TKIP or something like that.
When I was reading the manual, the 5-dot manual, I did see that, and I was like, I don't know.
If anybody out there can answer that, I'll send them something special in the mail. You know, I'll throw that out because I want to know. I asked Matt and he looked at me like, "What are you smoking, dude?" I know he's not an engineer and everything, but you know, it's I see why AES performs, because what we're seeing is we convert a backhaul link over from no encryption to AES, and we immediately see a 20% boost in capacity. I mean, just bam.
It could be the route that the packets are taking through the CPU and bypassing the CPU or whatever. Unencrypted might have to go through the CPU, and you know, AES just goes right through the chipset.
Hardware encryption
chipset, yeah. And right out the Ethernet port. You know, that could explain it.
That could explain it. Yeah, that's, you know, the only explanation anybody, even the, you know, the Streakwave folks who are doing a lot of the training, they're like, I don't know, well, that's what the manual says.
Yeah. I know on the AirFiber that all the traffic goes through the FCPA chip and not FPGA. Through the CPU. FPGA chip yeah. instead of the CPU. So when you use the SNMP, you don't see any of that information. You only see your management traffic that you're hitting on the web page or the SNMP. And so in that regards, if they're doing something similar with that, then that could explain it.
That could explain it, yeah.
I'm playing with
but all they have to do is just say that's what this is, and that kind of clears up the whole mystery.
You'll probably never get an answer.
Yeah. It's part of the secret sauce. They'll just say it's part of Air Max.
Yeah, it's Air Max. Shut up.
Yeah. I got a cape for the Beagle Bone. It's FPGA cape that we've been tinkering with, so... That's a different animal all to its own, those FPGA chips. So.
I've got a question here maybe you guys can answer. When you do a scan on Microtech and you can see all the other links, does AirFiber show up in – or not AirFiber, AirOS links on Ubiquiti show up in that as well? Or is it obscured?
Are you saying does it show up when you scan for the – like just a frequency scan?
The wireless frequency?
Yeah, it'll show up, but you can't connect.
Okay.
Even if they're running Air Max, you'll still see that?
Yeah.
I thought you would just see frequency stuff.
Yeah, well, it's still broadcasting the SSID, just regular, regular 802.
So it's a 802.11 protocol, but it's like NV2 running on top of it.
Yeah.
But it's Air Max's version. Okay.
See, we run all ours with channel shifting, so the center frequency moves, so it doesn't show up.
Yeah, if you're doing that, then it won't show up.
That would be very bad in an urban environment where you can't see all the other traffic. If I do a scan on some of these sectors, I'll see 30 to 50 5 gigahertz networks. And you've just got to pick the one that's used the least.
That's where you use the spectrum analyzer.
Yeah, that's exclusively what I use is AirVision.
Really excited about the FCC opening up more 5 gigahertz for use.
Yeah, hopefully they don't put too many restrictions on it.
So if you can use 2 dB at the emitter and then a 1 dB antenna, awesome.
It'd be great for your baby monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
You just need to get yourselves one of these.
Oh, goodness. One of what?
Let's see. Man, I got too much junk open here. Where did that go? Oh, I don't need steam. No way.
While JJ's searching. I think we beat most of those today. Matter, I'm just tired. I don't know. Well, I can't go to sleep. I got to finish this stuff. Anyway, neither here nor there. Let's. What are you guys doing in the next week or so? What do you got cooking? We'll go with Mr. Miller there. What do you got going this next week?
One-off air fiber installs. That and I'm working on a little project that our good friend Tom across the way knows about with SSH and Winbox and a little maybe an Autowit script that'll set up a tunnel for us to Winbox over SSH. I plan on integrating that with the dude so you can right-click and go to Tools and pick a device and have it automatically set up your tunnel and all of that. And get in there. That'll also allow us to have each tech have a individual username and password on each Microtech and control access and stuff like that. So I'm working on that. And I'm also working on a inventory system in CodeIgniter for us. And just trying to keep the network running.
The usual.
Yep.
Cool, man. Well, what do you got, Wilson?
I'm getting more and more. It's I'm going to become the bridge master here. I get more and more. Hey, I got this bridge network. We need to convert it to routed. I probably have 7 of them to do now. Which is great. It's got to the point now. It's, I talk to folks and, I have to tell them, hey, I'm not being nonchalant about this. I've just done this enough times that, here it is. you know, it might seem like a big deal to you, but it's not. So, you know, I got some of those to do.
It was a big deal for me.
Yeah, a big deal for you. you had a lot of custom stuff, though. Yeah. You know, you're not the typical WISP deployment.
I'm not single family homes.
So. Yeah, exactly. So I got some of that going on. What else do I have? Oh, I got a couple circuits too. I got to go actually to the data center tomorrow and plug in some things. You know, I love it. You know, 2 hour drive to boop. Okay, I got to go home. So, but you know, that's part of it.
So you're going to offer this thing called remote hands and eyes.
No. See, we offer two things. It's called remote hands and eyes and then intelligent remote hands and eyes.
Yeah.
So do you need me to log in and do things? One is I will push a button and then I'll push it again. Or I'll unplug it, I'll plug it back in. There's a difference. There's a difference. It's 3 a.m. Do I need to call Greg? Yes or no?
See, our data center, which is one of the most connected data centers in probably the Midwest, you know, outside of, you know, major city like Chicago, they don't offer any of that. You know, they're not guys who are just there to make sure the generators run and their own stuff runs. They won't, you know, they won't go reboot anything even if you try to bribe them. Which is, you know, I can see the benefits of that.
I guess. Give them a wireless phone. Better way.
Well, you know, you got the liability issues and, you know, stuff like that. Oh, man, the guy touched my server. Now it won't boot. And I'm sorry, your server was a piece of crap.
With your colo facility, you're going to sign an agreement that says, you know, if we break it in the course of whatever, we're not going to be held responsible for it. So you undertake the liability on yourself.
Yeah, why would a colo facility want to break your server anyway? It's like you're paying us every month to be here. I'm not going to break your stuff. I want it to stay here.
So let's see. What am I doing next week? I've been doing apartment complex. I get tired of doing like the OSPF conversions. Like I just get so tired of it. So whenever something new comes along, I like to jump at it. That's really what I'm looking for. It's just something different, something new. I like it when like I get a call from a bank or like a game designer or something, you know, just give me something new and different. I don't care what it is, just anything. This weekend I'm getting a turn off for a little bit. I'm going to Master Pancake. Gonna go see Armageddon. It's gonna be brilliant. It's basically Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's like a live version of that at this place where you get like food and you can get beer and all that stuff. But whereas Mystery Science Theater was on cable TV, so they had to, you know, keep the language clean and stuff. These guys are the filthiest bastards you've ever heard in your life. I mean, it is so vile. It is so hilarious. I just can't wait to go. And then right after that, there's a dueling piano bar like a block away, and we'll go over there and just it's basically sing as loud as you can. You know, amongst everybody else singing terribly. I'm just really looking forward to turning off for a little bit.
Cool.
Really looking forward to that. And discovered the skate park, our local skate park with the kids.
I saw your videos, yes.
Yeah, it's a blast, dude. I'm the only retard out there with a longboard, and I'm obviously the old guy at the park. But, you know, I'm hanging out with my 4-year-old and my 7-year-old, so it makes it okay, I think.
Do you have Come on.
I was just going to say that was a really cool video. You know, you watch it from his perspective, and it's like, wow, you know, this is like crazy stuff that you're doing here. And then you watch it from your perspective, and it's like, that's pretty, it's, you know, it, like, it looks like he's like, just like, you know, like Tony Hawk riding down through there. And then you watch it from your perspective, and he's like, you know, down on his knees, like, pedaling himself. It was so cool, you know.
They went out there today with their scooters, and I hear they're getting pretty crazy with that. I didn't get to go to that, but maybe tomorrow we'll get to go back. So I don't know.
Do you have any projects that you're doing for your kids? You know, you had the water park, and you had some other things that you've done. Do you have anything coming up like that?
The other day we picked up some PVC and fittings from the hardware store, because like you can get a 10-foot stick of half inch for like $1.70, $1.60, something like that. And so we made a bunch of weapons. Like we made like a battle axe and some swords. And
that's cool.
Covered in
styrofoam. Yeah, you know, watching Rick's Facebook is like how to be a dad.
Yeah.
How to be like a dangerous father, yeah. And so we do kind of have rough plans to build like a treehouse this summer. That'll be a fun one too. So what we always do is I say, okay, we're going to do this project. Now you guys go draw all of the things you want it to look like. And we'll kind of take their pictures, and then we'll make like a big design of whatever it is we're going to make. So we're gonna
That's cool.
Put them in the process. But I did clean my room too, which literally, I'm not even kidding, took me about 3.5 weeks. Like this room I'm sitting in, like the floor was so covered with stuff I couldn't even move. It was like you couldn't walk. You had to kind of like hop and then like take a long step, but then you could get through. And then I got rid of so much stuff. And I was thinking it was going to hurt me. It was going to like physically ail me to get rid of. Because I dumped like 6 PC cases, a bunch of motherboards, ton of computer parts, like a whole 5-gallon bucket full of computer parts. And I really didn't feel bad about it, you know, because it's like I was thinking if it's stuff I haven't touched in.
Yep.
6 to 8 months, then I'm never going to use it. Most of the stuff I didn't even remember I still had. So I did get a Cyclades console server that does like your Cisco console port. It's got like 48 ports. I got it on eBay for $50 or something like that. And so it's really great. You can like telnet into it just on different ports, and it automatically connects you right into your devices. So it's like I got the lab running, and I've got 2 of those digital loggers web switches, you know, the 8-port power control guys. So I've got like all of my lab equipment power controlled, and then I've got serial cables into all of it, and it's all cabled together. So nice. And I've only done like 4 things with it since I did that, but it's still there. It's ready to go. Anyway, what do you got cooking, JJ? What are you doing this week?
It's just been such a blur the last couple months. I've been AFK pretty much, you know, with the construction going on and just the last 2 months, you know, between, you know, doing installs, you know, I've not done a lot of like residential installs. We've got some people doing that for us now, but you know, the special installs, you know, the solar repeaters and the fun ones, I've been doing those and just building our you know, mini data center, if you will, and working on the Sensor Ninja project and building our little Super Arduino. We got some tomorrow. We're working on doing the duct work for the Liebert. I think we're gonna do a downflow because they're so much cheaper. But we're gonna get creative with it. It's gonna be suspended from the rafters. Or, you know, it's a metal building, so it'll be suspended. But just, it's a blur. Just all sorts of cool things going on. If it's got flashing lights on it, I'm going to play with it. So, but that's kind of been what's going on over here. Is just been a blur, you know, from the access control to the playing with the CCR to getting our Blade server going. Just I'm going to move Sensor Ninja over to that Blade server in the next day or three. And it's all virtualized, so I just use vCenter and go.
Okay.
So, but it's just a blur. It's been a blast. I've not had a day off in like 3 months. So
that's probably the longest you've sat still.
Yeah, actually, when you called, it woke me up, no doubt. So I was like, oh, holy crap, it's Tuesday already. So it's been a blur, but I'm happy to be here, you know, hanging out with my friends. So
cool, man. All right, man. Well, let's put a bow on it. Justin Miller, thank you very much for popping in. Hopefully we can have you some more. But off color commentary. Wilson, always keep it strong, brother. JJ, try and stay alive. Be sure to remember to eat lots of liquids. Say hi to your wife occasionally.
Yeah, that been working on that.
All right, brother. All right. So thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody who's watching will watch or just listen. It's far less interesting, I think, just listening. You gotta see the faces. You gotta know us. That way, whenever you see us, these things, you can totally be like, oh, hey, how you doing, man? Yeah, you remember you loaned me $5 that one time? Just kind of see how it goes from there. All right, guys. Thanks much.
Cool.
See you.